Beau Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Pre-recorded.
Thank you, Digital Henry. Good morning. It's the 25th of August, 2021. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm going to start the show off again with another Jack Webb show. This one is, I played this one several weeks ago. It's Pat Novak for Hire. This one's titled Dixie Jillian, with an original air date of the 24th of November, 1946. I will explain at the bottom of the hour why I'm continuing with this. But thanks for listening.
Gallon Cabs presents Pat Novak for Hire.
Sure, I'm Pat Novak for Hire. That's what the sign out in front of my office says. Pat Novak for Hire. Down on the waterfront in San Francisco, you always bite off more than you can chew. It's tough on your windpipe, but you don't go hungry. Down here, a lot of people figure it's better to be a fat guy in a graveyard than a thin guy in a stew. That way, you can be sure of a tight fit. Oh, I rent boats and do anything else that makes a sound like money. It works out all right if your mother doesn't mind you coming home for Christmas in a box. I found that out Wednesday night, about 9 o'clock. I closed the shop early and I came home to read. Well, it wasn't a bad book if you ever wanted to start a forest fire. It was one of those historical things, and the girl in it was just getting her second wind and her third man when the door to my apartment opened and the place began to get crowded. From where I sat, the crowd looked good. She sauntered in, moving slowly from side to side like 118 pounds of warm smoke. Her voice was all right, too. It reminded you of a furnace full of marshmallows.
Good evening.
Yeah, thanks for knocking.
I don't think you mind my coming in without warning.
No, I get the cabbage smell from next door the same way.
Does it pay to be that polite, Mr. Novak?
Saves you the trouble of saying please. What's on your mind?
That bottle in front of you. Will you pour me a drink?
No. We'll save dough if you look up a bartender.
All right. I came to use you instead of your whiskey anyway.
Talk.
My name is Lee Underwood. I'll give you $300 to do something for me. It'll only take an hour.
That's too much dough, unless it's murder. And if it is murder, it's not enough dough.
Are you afraid?
I just don't like paid murder, I told you. When you get caught, the pain gets expensive.
If it were murder, I'd do it myself. Mr. Novak, I want you to frighten someone for me.
Why don't you hire a friend? Are they too pretty?
It's a man named Dixie Gillian. You'll find him in an office down on Folsom Street, at this address. I promise nothing will happen to you.
That's what they told Billy Kahn.
He'll be in this office until 11 tonight. I want you to go in and see him. Tell him you're from Adrian, and that he's to get out of town by tomorrow noon.
I suppose he wants to put it off.
He won't. Don't let him know who hired you. Just tell him Adrian said to leave.
Yeah. You better go home. For 300 bucks, I won't buy a tissue paper plot. Now tell me more or say goodbye.
There's not much more I can tell you, except there won't be any trouble. He's a rotten little beast, and I want him frightened badly.
Why?
He's been bothering my sister.
Why doesn't he bother you?
Because I bother back too fast. Do you want the 300, Mr. Novak?
Yeah. It's going to be a long winter. Put it on the table.
Good. And you'll need this, too.
No, you keep it. I don't want a gun.
It's empty. Don't worry. See? No shells. It's perfectly safe.
Now, look. I've got a nasty disposition. You can rent that for 300 bucks, but if you want more, find a gunsel or an off-duty copper, will you?
I don't want you to be a gunsel. That's why I want you to use this gun. I know it's empty. If you use it on Dixie, he'll scare fast. It's just a way to save some breath.
All right. It's your 300.
You better go now.
Yeah. Wait till I get a coat, will you? If your doorbell rings, don't play mouse.
Oh?
Because I may look you up.
Am I too young to ask why?
Because if anything goes wrong, I'll be around looking for you. From there on, it won't be nice. I'll dirty you up like a locker room towel.
Relax, Patsy. You'll never learn to fall in love that way.
She handed me the gun and walked out of my apartment. Seeing her leave made you feel like Frank Buck losing an argument. She walked with a nice, easy swing of a satisfied leopard, and for a small leopard, she had pretty good spots, too. I put the gun in my overcoat pocket, and I went down to Folsom Street. The address was down near the bridge entrance, and the street was deserted except for a couple of winos near the corner trying to buy back 1926 at a dollar a jug. I stopped in front of the place. It was a machinery company. I could see a light burning in the back. I began to walk through the place. It was so quiet you could hear a worm with whooping cough, and there were enough shadows around to keep a ghost happy for years. When I got to the office back in the corner, through the glass, I could see a man sitting at the desk. When I opened the door and walked in, he didn't seem surprised.
Come on in, mister. You're bad on noise.
Yeah?
That's right. You make too much for a thief and not enough for a customer. What do you want?
About 10 words, if you're Dixie Gillian.
Go ahead.
You better look up a timetable.
What makes you that tough?
This.
Oh. Why do you look tougher with a gun? Does it make you talk faster?
I'm going to say it's slow, mister. Pack up your rompers and get out.
Is that you talking or somebody else?
I'm just the guy with a gun. Adrian does the talking.
And he says get out.
That's right. You got the whole message now.
All right, you told me. So wander out and spend your dough.
I will.
You'll need part of it, though, because I'm going to give you an answer for Adrian. I'm going to take that gun away from you, mister. You can pick the pieces out of your head on the way home.
You better stand back or I'll share it with you.
You got your offer, mister. Let's see you make good here.
Save your muscle, fella.
Drop that gun, will you?
Save your muscle, fella. The gun's empty.
Somebody fooled us, mister.
Sometimes you can get a home run with a half swing. That's the way it was this time. He couldn't have made it with a prayer book in both hands. He slid down to the floor and trembled for a moment and then flattened out like a leaf in a pool of water. Just before he died, he grabbed his side as if he didn't like the way it hurt. And then he didn't care. I rolled him on his back and let him look at the ceiling. His eyes were open and he looked surprised, like a guy who didn't figure on a change in the weather. There was a scar that ran across his forehead and dug deep into his hairline. And he was lying there with a bunch of pink gum showing as if he was trying to pick up a few bucks with a toothpaste ad. I didn't have time to tell him how sorry I was, because if homicide caught me here, I'd have about as much chance as a canary in a basement full of cats. I started for the door. Right then, I knew I could start ordering birdseed. It was Hellman. And he walked over to have a look at the body.
Hello, Novak. The guy looks embarrassed.
Yeah, I guess he is, Hellman.
What's he doing dead?
Putting in a beef somewhere, I guess. He rates it.
He'll like you for that, Novak. How did it happen?
A team play. We worked it out together.
But you've got the gun.
That's right. I got the gun.
You feel like a bet?
No. Just keep stealing the old way.
You know how I feel, Novak?
Yeah, you feel flabby to anybody else, but to yourself, I suppose you feel good. Now, look, I walked in here with a gun. There was some quick fight talk, and I killed him, but it's still not a good rap.
I can get a long price on it for you, Novak.
I bet you can, Hellman. You can give me a bad deal, but part of the time it'll be from the other side of the deck.
Worse than that, Novak. It'll be all the time, and I want to watch it because I think you're going to be a crybaby.
I'm going to scream, if that's what you mean, Hellman. I'm going to scream about a gal that sent me in here with an empty gun.
That's a big hole for a cap pistol, Novak.
I got a last-minute curve. It was empty once.
Yeah. That's the only way they make a gun, Novak. I don't want you for an hour ago. I want you for this dead guy on the floor.
All right, all right. I told you I didn't come in here to kill the guy. I don't know him. He may even be a good guy. I'm sorry he's dead.
All right, Novak. Just wait a few weeks and you can tell him personally.
Hellman had me up against the rail and he knew it. When we left there, he was wearing a big, toothy smile. It was big enough to sew in his ears. He called the coroner and he told him to pick up the stiff and then we rode downtown. He dropped the gun into ballistics and he hauled me into his office. The reporters were there. He gave them the whole story and told them how to spell Hellman. After that, we wound up at the desk and he booked me on suspicion of murder. The next hour and a half was the kind of stuff they don't write about in the paper. They call it interrogation. When you're finished, you've been through a lot of tight spots, like a piece of bubble gum and a set of false teeth. About 11 o'clock, Hellman brought me into his office, and from there on, it happened kind of fast.
I just talked to the DA. He's going to streamline things for you.
Well, he's going to look funny. Going to trial on a guy you can't identify.
I won't press you. I don't have to, Novak. I've got the only parley I need. You, the dead guy, and a big, fat murder gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hellman talking. Yeah, I know it was a 38. That crazy down in ballistics, I saw him standing over the dead guy. Well, they must have made a mistake, that's all. No, I don't want him in here. I don't want him in here. Hey, Tony. Tony, I...
You're getting pale. You need some more rouge, Hellman.
I got some bad news, Inspector.
Well, keep it, or you'll take more home to your wife. I'll talk to you later.
No, talk to him now, Hellman. If the bullet doesn't match the gun, talk to him now.
That's right, Inspector. A 38 bullet, but it won't match the gun you brought in.
It's got a match. I came in and found him standing there. He admits it.
It's a neat trick, then. If he fired the bullet out of that gun, he retooled it in midair.
I'm not that fast, Hellman. Get out of that chair so you'll have room to squirm.
You keep still, Novak.
Oh, I won't bother you. I'm going home.
Huh?
I'm walking out of your jail, Hellman. You got a broken down 38 that won't fit anything but your thumbs. You can't hold me on that.
I found you over the body. I can hold you on suspicion of murder.
But it'll hurt tomorrow morning, Hellman. The papers will be down here for a follow-up. You'll have to tell them what it looks like out in left field.
I'll handle them.
You can't afford to let them start laughing at you. People will get the idea it's your face.
You can save Carter if you stay right here. Because I'll have you back by noon tomorrow.
You're not that good, Hellman. You couldn't hold a moth with a searchlight. The town ought to thank you.
Eh?
Oh, it's a nice jail, Hellman. And with you around, it'll last for years. When I walked out of headquarters, I had a nice mess to juggle. It was like trying to walk the baby on a floor full of marbles. If things didn't add up for Hellman, they weren't doing any better for me. I knew the gun I had went off. If it did, what happened to the bullet? And where did the other one come from? And why weren't there two shots? Oh, I couldn't put my finger on a thing, and nothing added up. It was like trying to follow a grain of rice in a Shanghai suburb. I looked up Lee Underwood's address, and I went by her apartment. The girl downstairs told me she worked at a nightclub out in the Bayshore Highway. Well, I had a couple of places to hit, so I looked up the only honest guy I know. An ex-doctor and a boozer by the name of Jocko Madigan. A good man until he began to figure the last drink in a bottle is just as easy to get as the first. Well, I found him in a little leather-trimmed sink on Powell Street with a grimy little hole where they wash the glasses once a week in stale beer, but Jocko was more at home than a vulture in Calcutta.
Patsy, you're just in time to celebrate my return to health. Something mild for Mr. Novak. A double stinger, perhaps.
No, forget it, Jocko. I gotta talk to you.
Patsy, I've just passed through a crisis.
Yeah.
A few minutes ago, they set before me a glass with a woman's lipstick all around the rim.
All right, Jocko.
I took one gulp and looked at the glass, and in this dim light, I thought I was bleeding to death. It took them 10 minutes and 3 mirrors to calm me down.
Jocko, I'm in trouble. You gotta help me.
No, but they washed the glass for me in ammonia. They must have left a little ammonia in the glass because the next drink had a very odd tang about it. I've had 3 more just like it. A sort of ammonia colony.
All right.
So far, they've been using domestic ammonia. When the imported stuff comes in, I may give up whiskey altogether.
Calm down, will you, Jocko? I got a bum shake tonight.
Yeah?
I either killed a guy or I thought I did.
Well, that uses up the alternatives. What are you doing now, taking a vote?
I got hired to scare a guy down on Folsom Street. 10 minutes later, the guy was dead.
Oh, Patsy, you take your work too seriously. Couldn't you have just scared him into a lingering illness instead of killing him?
One of the props was an empty gun. Only when the fight came, it grew bullets. Hellman walked in right after on a telephone tip.
What are you doing out of the electric chair?
Oh, the whole thing backfired down at headquarters. The bullet and the phony gun wouldn't match. Oh, Jocko, it doesn't add up. The call to Hellman's a tip-off. I was framed, but why wasn't I framed all the way?
Well, who is the dead man?
The guy with a falling blood count. His name was supposed to be Dixie Gillian, but there's no identification and no record on him.
Oh, you shouldn't have hired out as a gunsel.
I told you I didn't hire out as a gunsel. It was somebody else's idea.
Oh, you have no conscience, Patsy. Just a sort of soap opera rule of thumb you put into practice now and then, but no real conscience. You'd let a dying woman lie in the middle of the highway, unless her head was resting on a pile of war bonds.
All right, Jocko, I'll cry with you later. I need help now.
Well, what sort of help?
I want you to break into a girl's apartment.
Yes?
Don't worry, she won't be home.
Oh, is that supposed to be an incentive?
Here, it's at this address up on O'Farrell. Her name is Lee Underwood. She's the one who hired me.
Well, if the girl's not there, what am I supposed to find?
Anything that'll connect her with a dead man. He's a big guy with a scar.
Well, that doesn't help much.
You can't miss. Go through the desk and the drawers. Pick up everything you can. Leave a message at my place, huh?
Oh, as soon as I finish this drink.
Hurry up, will you, Jocko? Leave the glass alone and get going.
Don't rush me.
Hurry up. The glass is empty anyway.
Yeah, that's what you thought about the gun, but the fellow got an awful jolt out of it. Good night, lover.
I went by a horse parlor on O'Farrell Street and borrowed a car from a guy. It was after midnight when I started down the Bayshore Highway, and about a half hour later I pulled up in front of the Cat's Paw. It was a long, rambling place on the left side of the road. No, there was no plan. It just followed the erosion line until they ran out of material. There was enough neon in front to light a main intersection in heaven. I asked a 50-year-old busboy, and he said Lee Underwood was back in her dressing room getting ready for the 1 o'clock show. When I walked in, she was sitting in front of a mirror, working on an upswept hairdo. If she swept it up any more, it was going to leave her head. I stood behind her, looking at the pink, fresh part of her neck that didn't show when her hair was down.
You seem fascinated, Patsy.
No. I just want to know where to break it.
Oh? Sit down on the footstool here next to me. That's it. I like to look down on people. Here, let me brush that strand of hair back. What do you like it in your eyes?
Brush it back so I can see your answers. Who's Dixie Gillian?
What difference does it make?
None to him and some to me. He's dead.
No. No, he couldn't be dead.
He'd like to believe that, too. I couldn't sell him that story about an empty gun.
He couldn't have been killed with that gun.
No?
No, I put in a blank, Patsy.
Somebody used a hard-working bullet because Dixie's dead.
There was no reason to kill him. I don't understand.
That makes you even with homicide, but they got a bigger team.
I don't understand it, Patsy.
Who's Dixie Gillian?
He was after some microfilm. I thought I could scare him away.
You better be ready to identify him because homicide stopped. Even the scar didn't help.
What scar?
Scar across his face. There's no record on him.
Oh, no, no, Patsy. Everything goes wrong. Everything you touch goes wrong. That's the wrong man, Patsy.
Yeah. Well, it's too late for a recount.
You've got to get to that body, Patsy. I don't know how, but some way you've got to get to him.
You look good, Lee. You'll make a nice picture.
Wait a minute, Dixie.
You don't need your coat. Come on.
I don't know how it happened, Dixie. I didn't mean it that way.
If you like it that way, all right. Bring your boyfriend, too.
No, don't let him, Patsy.
Oh, that gun's too big. I'm going with him. It was a short trip. He led us out of the dressing room and down a thin hall to the back door. On the way past the kitchen, you could smell onions and used grease, and that's all you noticed, except the sound of a jukebox somewhere out in front, and someone laughing in a loud, mirthless way. When we got to the door, it was raining outside. We walked about 40 feet over near some trees where the dark was working overtime, and the gunsel made her stop. And that's where it happened. She's going to get wet, mister.
You'll have a little trouble yourself.
When I woke up, it was still raining, and I was lying on top of the mud like a stubborn seed. My wallet was gone, and the gunsel had ripped open my pockets. I stood up, and I walked over for a last look at Lee. The rain had washed the makeup off her face, and she looked small and tired as she lay there, like a broken doll that had been tossed out from the rain. I guess she was. I got to the car, and I drove back to town. I checked my place, but there was no word from Jocko, so I went up to Lee's apartment. When I opened the door, the room was dark, but I knew someone was on the floor. Either that or they'd varnished the floor with bourbon. I flipped on the light and bent over Jocko. Wake up, Jocko. Come on. All right, Jocko, wake up.
A little ammonia, I think, would bring me around.
What happened?
I was sapped, I guess.
Yeah, everybody's got the same act tonight.
Help me up.
All right, come on.
Where have you been?
I went down to meet the girl.
Huh? Where'd you meet her? In the swimming pool?
I've been in the rain all night. She's going to stay longer. What'd you find out?
The fellow with the scar is her husband.
Yeah?
There's a picture in the desk.
Are there any more pictures?
A few. Take a look.
Where, in here?
Yes.
Well, well.
Who is he?
Must be Dixie Gillian. He was down to pay off a debt tonight. She called him Dixie once.
There's a note with that name and address in the other drawer.
He's our boy. We better get up there.
Not if he's already killed two other people.
We can't wait for Hellman. If he gets away, I'm all through. I won't have a leg to stand on.
That's my point. When the other fellow gets through with us, we won't have much standing to do.
I felt better now. Gillian was the only guy left in the picture, so I dragged Jocko up to his place. It was an apartment on Post Street. The elevator operator took us to the 8th floor and said that Gillian had come in a few minutes before. There was no answer, So we tried the door and it was open. Jocko didn't like the idea.
Oh, Patsy, this is folly. Risking my life is one of the bravest things you do.
Keep still, Jocko. What are we supposed to do? The door was open, wasn't it?
So are a lot of graves, but I've never been tempted.
Hey, look at the furniture. There's been a fight here. I'll look in here. You check in the bedroom.
If I'm not right back, don't expect me at all.
Yeah.
Patsy! Patsy, come here!
Yeah?
There's somebody on the fire escape.
Stand back here.
He's not moving. He was leaning that way when I first saw him.
I'll get on this side. You raise the window. Go easy, Jocko. Can you see him from there?
Raise it a little more. He's still leaning there. I can reach out.
Now watch yourself. If he's kidding, you'll lose an arm.
I've got him. Raise the window more.
Yeah.
Oh, Patsy, he's falling. Give me a hand.
Oh, here, let me through there.
Oh, it's too late. I can't hold him. He's falling. I'm sorry.
Yeah. He was probably dead anyway.
If he wasn't, that was a step in the right direction.
Oh, it was an easy night to die. Three of them had checked out already, and there was still time to look for more. Jocko and I went downstairs to see the guy. He was lying face down in the alley, and as you looked at him, you got the funny feeling he belonged there. He didn't disturb the scene. He just fitted in, like a dirty, wet newspaper under a grandstand. There was a gun in his pocket, probably the same one that killed the girl, but there was no way of knowing. Jocko and I watched him for a moment, but your eyes begin to hurt when you see your only warm lead in a deep freeze. Well, it was past two when I got down to headquarters and I looked up Hellman. I briefed him on the girl and the guy in the alley, and then I asked him if any microfilm had turned up on the first guy in the morgue. It was a waste of time. Hellman couldn't find a brass ring in a dead man's nose, but we went over to the morgue for another look. So far, it was working out like a crossword puzzle torn in half.
It's your time, Novak. I got more after tomorrow. You haven't.
The microfilm must be on the guy. Three people have been killed for it, and I got roughed up just for laughs.
We searched the guy once. Here it is. Help me roll it out.
Yeah. Well, well. He sure got thin under that sheet, didn't he?
Wait a minute.
Oh, you run a good morgue, Hellman. What'll the papers say when they hear the stiff got up and walked out?
They got him in the wrong place or something. He didn't walk out.
He's gone, Hellman. Have you got an answer?
He's been moved, I tell you. The guy was dead and I saw him put him here. He couldn't be walking around with a hole in the middle of his back.
Oh, I don't know, Hellman. You can do it with one in your head. Don't sell the guy short. When Hellman found out the body was gone, he stood there and stared at the empty slab. And then he started looking around in a nervous way, like a man trying to find the sugar bowl at a restaurant counter. A few moments later, he turned and walked out of the morgue, and we were halfway downtown when it happened. It must have hit us at the same time, sharp and quick, like a piece of candy in a bad tooth. That guy back in the alley had come off that slab in the morgue. We got out to Dixie's place, and we began to check. There was a phone operator downstairs, and she said Dixie had put through a call about 2 hours ago. Hellman checked the number, and it was the ticket office of a railroad. We got downtown and we ran through the timetable. There was a train leaving the Oakland Mole in 40 minutes. Oh, it was an outside chance, but tonight that was the only kind for sale. We got down in time to slide on the last ferry over to the Mole. It was still dark out when the ferry pulled away from the slip and started across the bay. Over toward the Berkeley Hills, it was beginning to get light. The sky was the color of a bruise spot on a man's arm.
We'll get up to the pilot house and tell him not to dock until we've gone through all the passengers.
He doesn't have to be in on this one.
He'll check the train when he gets there.
Wait a minute. You don't have to check. There's your boy.
Where?
Up there, on the rail. Now, you better go easy. He's not a scale model.
Just walk quietly until we're behind him.
Yeah.
Turn around, mister. He'll get a better view.
Oh. Now, hello, Novak. How was the wind and the rain in your hair?
Meet Inspector Hellman. You better turn in your ticket.
Well, I hope you brought your muscle.
Grab it, Hellman.
That's what I'm trying to do. All right, copper. Watch it. I'm being pushed over the rail.
Yeah, I'm worried, Hellman.
Watch it, Novak. I'm going over. Novak! That's one down, mister. Now for you.
Yeah. Well, I landed on the deck, and I watched him disappear in the dark. Halfway down, the guy turned in. I followed him down the ladder and along the main deck.
He ducked into one of the engine spaces, and I started in to look for him. Oh, it didn't take long, because he turned out to be helpful.
You got the idea yet, Novak?
I'll come closer. Tell me then, huh?
Suit yourself, and I'll knock you down hard when you show.
Hey, watch that platform. You're backing into trouble.
Stay back there, Novak.
Watch out for that platform. You're backing into that engine. Look out!
No! No! No!
I kind of wound up last, huh?
Yeah. That's the way it looks. Did you get the microfilm?
Yeah. Oh, I got a big hurt. Does it show?
A little.
Yeah. It's been a long night, Novak, huh?
Yeah, but your worries are over. It's almost dawn.
I don't know. I don't know if I can use it, but I'll give it to you.
Well, they fished Hellman out of an oil slick a few minutes later. It was the first time his hair ever looked good. Dixie Gillian lasted long enough to piece the story together for homicide. Lee Underwood was on the level. She knew her husband was carrying microfilm and was worried, so she hired me to scare off Gillian. It might have worked, too, because Adrian was too big for Gillian to argue with. But the first slip came when Lee's husband went by to make a deal with Dixie without telling her. Well, when I jumped him, Dixie was outside and figured it was a double cross. He didn't have time to figure it, but he killed him with a silencer when Lee's phony gun went off. Well, he spent the rest of the time looking for the microfilm. That's why Jocko got sapped and the girl got hers. And by that time, Dixie knew the microfilm was still on the dead man. The only way he could be sure was to get the body out of the morgue. He took it up to his apartment, and when he got the film, he planted the gun and put the body on the fire escape. It was safer that way. There was a 50-50 chance the police would miss it the first time around, and he'd have a fair lead. It almost worked out for him, except for that phone call. The microfilm? Well, it was in a capsule next to the roof of the guy's mouth. Yeah, so old it was new again. Well, Hellman asked only one question. In that fight, did I have anything to do with pushing him against the rail? I told him. Sometimes those ferry boats roll as much as 45 degrees.
We heard Pat Novak for Hire, starring Jack Webb, titled Dixie Gillian, whatever. With an original air date of the 24th of November, 1946. Pat Novak for Hire aired on ABC West Coast from 1946 to the spring of 1947 when writer Richard Breen and Webb departed. Actually, Webb returned to the series from 13th of February to the 18th of June in 1949 before Dragnet was debuted. We're going to go ahead and pause for a second for a station ID and an FCC obligation. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.
If a natural disaster comes knocking, how prepared is your family? You can't just close the door on earthquakes, floods, or hurricanes and hope they go away. That's why it's important to make a plan now. Ready.gov/plan has the tools and tips you need to prepare your family for an emergency. So if disaster shows up at your doorstep, you'll be ready. Visit ready.gov/plan and make a plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Thank you, lads, and thank you, Ad Council. For the second half of the program, I'm going to play Johnny Madero, Pier 13, which the Encyclopedia of Old Time Radio says it's the exact same show as Pat Novak for Hire, except with a different title, because Jack Webb and Richard Breen, when they left Pat Novak in 1947, they left San Francisco for Hollywood. and started this show. It's part of the reason I'm playing them back to back, because to be honest with you, I didn't realize Jack Webb did much outside of Dragnet before I started investigating. I'm just playing these back to back because they're supposedly kind of mirrored shows, so we'll see. So this is Johnny Madero, Pier 13, The Man Who Chased Himself, with an original air date of the 23rd of June, 1947. Thanks for listening.
I rent boats and do anything else you can blame on your environment. It works out all right. But pretty soon word gets around and you got a reputation. And it doesn't pay to argue, because even if you're leveling, you make as much headway as a whistler with a split lip. I found that out last Wednesday afternoon. I was looking out the window watching the tide come in when somebody in back of me coughed. When I turned, Nat Finley was standing there in the office. He didn't say anything for a minute, and you noticed his eyes were as soft as the inside of a woman's arm. He had one of those faraway looks you couldn't follow with a road map. And then I saw the rest of him. He wasn't flabby, but he was on the way. And you got the idea he was an ex-fighter who settled down with a restaurant.
I got the right place, haven't I?
If a woman screams you haven't, what's on your mind?
That's a good question, Madero. That's a good question. That's what I want you to find out.
Look, fella, maybe I don't even want to be friendly. What's on your mind?
I don't know, Madero. I don't know.
All right, you convinced me. Now back out of here and we'll both be in the dark. Huh?
Wait a minute, Madero. Listen to me. My name is Nat Finley. My wife and I live up in Knob Hill, and I've been retired for a while, see? And...
I don't, but go ahead.
Well, you got to help me, Madero. I'll pay you $50 a day to help me.
At that price, it won't be help.
I want you to find someone for me, but I don't know who or why yet.
We're back to that again, huh?
Oh, listen to me. Lately, a name has been ringing in my ears. Just a name. Pete Sucho. Pete Sucho, over and over again.
So you read it somewhere.
I don't know where I picked it up. For the last week, the name Pete Sucho has been on my mind. It's a nightmare. You got to do something about it, Madero.
Change your diet. That might help.
I want you to find Pete Sucho. Find out who he is, where he is, why he's bothering me. If you do, I'll give you a $200 bonus.
Look, Finley, is this a job or a career? There must be a dozen Sutros from here to Jersey City.
Maybe, but the Pete Sucho I want lives right here in this town. He's got to.
There's a law?
Listen to me, Madero. Last night, I kept hearing the name Sucho again. Only this time there was an address, too. It was care of General Delivery, San Francisco. So he's got to be somewhere in this town.
Why don't you check the phone book?
I have, and the city directory, too. But so far, I haven't been able to locate him.
And I will, huh?
Well, if you don't, you're still getting $50 a day. What are you worried about?
That $50 a day? It might turn out to be a dream, too. You better throw in some advance money.
Sure, Madel. I brought a check along, just in case. Will $100 cover your doubts?
Yeah, if the bank can cover your check.
If they can't, you don't have to do the job. That fair enough?
Mm-hmm.
Will you start looking right away?
Yeah.
But you got to be careful, Madero. My wife's never to know about this, understand?
Why?
Because, well, she doesn't like the idea. She thinks I'm a little crazy looking for a name like this. She hates me, I think. She thinks I'm crazy.
Don't worry about her, Finley, until she starts mixing your nightcaps. For $50 a day, I'll chase anybody's dream. Because with that kind of dough, you're rich enough to run down a couple of your own. When Finley left, I called the bank and found out his check had solid backing. So I went down to Lofty's and I put out some feelers on Pete Sutro. It didn't take long before one of the boys came up with the lead. A couple of other people were looking for Sutro, too. One was a guy named Marty Kane. The other was a torch singer named Evelyn Day. The word was that Sutro and Evelyn used to trade mash notes in Detroit. Well, I phoned the Jade Club where Evelyn was working, but she wasn't due for an hour. So I decided to give Marty Kane first try. He was living in a motel out in the marina, so I went out. There was a sign outside that said Modern Cabins, but you knew Abe Lincoln did better in Illinois. The cabins were the size of an upper berth with enough holes to start a punch board. That didn't leave much privacy. You had more chance of keeping a secret from Mata Hari. I asked the manager where Kane's place was, and he pointed to the end cabin. I went over and knocked on the door. Kane opened it and glared. His eyes were the color of Saturday night on a week-old jag, and he was so chunky you figured he'd be harder to move than an icebox through a basement window.
Who are you?
My name's Madero, Johnny Madero.
Don't rhyme with anything. What are you looking for?
A guy named Pete Sutro. I hear you got the same idea.
So you got ears. I'll invite you in.
I can't turn you down.
Yeah, that's what everybody says about this gun. Now sit down, you get me nervous.
Put away the gun and we'll both be calm, huh?
After you tell me what you know about Sutro.
I'm tracking down a dream.
Yours?
A client's. You sound anxious. What's your pitch?
A wild one. Just say he owes me some dough and I need it bad now.
You got the muscles, take in laundry.
I'll put you through the ringer first. I want to lead on Sutro.
Yeah, we both do, but I'm not going down on my knees.
Get up, Madero. I don't want to make a liar out of you again.
Yeah, you're tough, Kane. I'll bet you got your dandruff scared stiff.
Yeah, and I'll start on yours now. What Sutro to you?
$50 a day. A guy named Nat Finley hired me to track him down. Does that make you happy?
No, just ambitious. Who's Nat Finley?
He came in and paid me to find Sutro. He said the name was giving him nightmares.
Sounds like a bedtime story, Madero.
Well, if you don't like it, jazz it up. It's the truth.
I read the wrong papers. Give me another version.
All right, if you don't believe me, Kane, make up your own. Here's Finley's check. Can you read?
If you'll help me with the big words. Give it here. Nat Finley. Nat Finley. You weren't lying. Looks like a good check. I'll take a chance. I'll cash it for you.
It's giving you ideas, huh?
Yeah, and the first one's about you. Here's your dough, Madero. Now get out. Get out quick.
Oh, you're too good to me, Kane. Suppose the check bounces.
It won't, Madero. Because I ain't going to cash it.
Oh, I couldn't figure it. Kane looked at the check and smiled like a guy who just learned all about the atom bomb. I walked out. The only thing I knew for sure was the demand for Pete Sutro was big enough to start a business boom. I headed back to my apartment to see how much lip I could bring down with an ice bag and a little pressure. When I got there, the door was open and the light was on. Inside, things looked even brighter. A brunette was draped over the couch like she paid the first installment on it. She was about 25, with a pair of legs that would have made a silkworm turn over and write a fan letter. She wore a tan business suit, and the way it was rumpled up, you knew office hours were over. When she saw me, she began to vibrate like an alarm clock at 6 a.m.
Good evening.
I won't argue, but you got the wrong room.
Will I regret it?
I don't know you that well.
Oh, you'll catch up with the crowd. My name is Sheila. I'm Nat Finley's wife.
You should be somebody's wife. It cuts down on the risk.
I want to talk to you.
Go ahead. I'll try not to stare.
Let's have a drink first, Mr. Madero. Maybe it will cloud your vision.
Yeah, and the issue, too, huh?
You serve strong stuff, Mr. Madero. Soda?
I'm all charged up now, lady. What's on your mind?
I have a problem. Maybe you can help me.
Maybe it's too late. I'm listening.
It's about my husband, Nat. He tries, but he can't hide much from me.
I'll bet you have the same trouble. Look, lady, you're working too hard for a sale. If you've got a point, make it.
All right, Mr. Madero, we'll skip the intermission. My husband saw you tonight and sold you a wild story.
Yeah, but it paid off. So far, I'm not complaining.
But I am. I want you to drop the whole silly job Nat gave you.
You're not building a case. $50 a day buys a lot of hangover, lady.
You don't understand, Mr. Madero. My husband is a sick man.
Yeah, I know. He can't sleep at night.
He has a large imagination, and it's been getting worse lately. He dreams up things. Sometimes I think he's a little crazy.
Maybe it's a hobby. He can afford it.
There are some things even he can't afford.
Yeah, like finding Pete Sutro.
That's right, Mr. Madero. There is no such man.
A guy named Marty Kane will give you odds.
Who did you say?
Marty Kane. He cashed in your husband's check. Do you know him?
No. No, I never heard of him.
You don't sound so sure. Marty was talking about Sutro.
All right, Mr. Madero. I'm talking about something else now. Money.
So far, you're whispering.
Shouting, Mr. Madero. $500 worth. I'll give you $500 to drop the job and forget everything.
All right, baby, you twisted my arm.
You won't let me down, Mr. Madero. Will you?
If I do, it'll be nice and easy. Finley had the kind of a wife you mate with a panther. She picked up her purse and peeled off 500 fish. She wasn't talking anymore, and when she swayed out, you wondered how much night practice she'd given that rumba. Well, I was all washed up with the Finleys, and it felt good already. So did the dough. I felt like a guy whose name was just picked in a chain letter. My mind was free for the better things of life. So I called up a girl out on Van Ness and told her to meet me at the Regent Bowling Alley. I got there before she did, so I started warming up the alley. A few minutes later, it got a lot warmer because Inspector Warcheck of San Francisco Homicide began spoiling my game.
Hello, Madero. It was a nice strike.
You're in the wrong kind of alley, Warcheck. What do you want?
Some pointers. You got time?
No.
I can see how you hold a bowling ball. Now show me how you hold a gun, huh?
All right, Warcheck. What's on your mind?
I was on Marty Kane's.
A guy named Pete Sutro. He owed Kane some money.
And you paid off?
I paid him a visit. We had something in common.
And you must have bored him to death. Kane couldn't quite stand a couple of slugs in his forehead, so he quit.
Well, what do you want me to do, Warcheck? Break the news to his wife?
No. Just tell me about the argument you had.
It was a monologue. Kane wanted to know where Sutro was hiding. I only knew one answer, so he did all the talking.
Oh, you should have said please. It's not polite to interrupt a guy with a gun.
Look, Warcheck, what makes me the blue plate special?
The motel manager. He said you go into Kane's room, and then he heard a struggle, and then later on he heard a shot.
Did he hear who won the fourth? Listen, copper, a guy named Nat Finley hired me to find out who Pete Sutro was. The name was playing tag in his brain all week, and he wanted to know why.
Yeah, does that sound like a story?
Check with Finley. He's the guy who made it up.
What if he lets you down?
And work on his wife. She's not bad-looking, and she paid me to drop Finley's account.
I'll check both your alibis, Manero. In the meantime, I want to line you up.
While you're making the rounds, look up a gal named Evelyn Day. She knew Sutro, too.
Go ahead. Run the police force. Tell me what to ask her.
Forget it, Warchick. You're not the type. Warchick stood there for a second, wiping his teeth with his tongue. If he'd done it on the outside, it would have been a contract job. And then one of the bowlers in a tight pair of slacks brushed up against him and went out. He looked at me once more and headed after her. Well, I didn't feel much like bowling either, so I left the note at the desk with a girlfriend and started out. I knew I was in trouble. Some days it's harder to duck trouble than a handful of pebbles. Oh, I told myself I didn't kill Kane, but that was like trying to fight a fire with an anti-smoke law. The big question was Pete Sutro. Who was he? There were other questions, like why did the Finley dame buy me off? And why did her husband want Sutro in the first place? Well, there were no answers, and I felt about as safe as an alligator walking through a handbag factory, so I looked up the only good guy I know, a waterfront priest named Father Leahy. I found him in his room, flipping through a couple of raffle books.
Hello, Johnny. You're just in time to buy a ticket. The boys' club is raffling off an electric toaster.
I'm already a little burned, Father.
I'm in a spot, Johnny. The boys gave me a quota to fill. I got stuck at a banker's luncheon all afternoon. You know what they're like on risks.
Yeah.
I've got to sell some tickets.
All right, I'll buy a couple, but I need your help. I'm in trouble.
You'd better buy five. At a time like this, both of us can afford to be generous. What kind of trouble?
This won't take long, Father.
You always say that, but it adds up. You don't realize it, but I lose whole weekends that way.
Will you please listen, Father? Warchick wants to pin me down on a murder.
He's got the weight. Who's dead?
A guy named Marty Kane. I saw him a couple of hours ago, and he was still alive when I left.
Can you prove it?
Well, that's going to be tough. The clerk at the motel saw me go into Kane's room just before he got tumbled.
So far, you don't have a way out. Why not plead insanity?
I would, but I'm afraid of the competition.
What do you mean?
A muddled-up guy named Nat Finley hired me to chase down the name Pete Sutro. He claimed the name was haunting him.
I know how he feels. Johnny, I don't think the bishop likes me either.
My only lead was Marty Kane, and he seemed to want Sutro worse than I did.
Sutro is certainly popular for a dream. Do you think he'll ever materialize?
I don't know, but I don't think Marty Kane was killed over a dream.
If he was, it must have been quite a nightmare. Did you look up your client again?
I didn't have the time. His wife paid me to drop the whole job. She said Finley was a harmless duck with a pail full of wild ideas.
Does the husband feel the same way about his wife?
Do you want gossip, Father, or do you want to help me?
That's an unfair question, Johnny. Either way, I'm embarrassed.
Please, Father, will you check up on a few people for me?
Yes.
Look up Kane's friends, and if you run out of those, try his enemies. Find out who might have had an urge to kill him, will you?
It's a tall order, Johnny. There may be a lot of people involved.
I can use them all, Father.
I know. But can they all use an electric toaster?
When I left Father Leahy, I knew I still had one base to tag. It was Sutro's ex-flame, a doll named Evelyn Day. I drove down to Eddy Street and I parked near the Jade Club. Well, it's not a bad place, but on a slow night, even the winos are afraid to go in. Inside, it was dark enough to hide the decimal point on a check, and over by the bar, there was a piano playing music that nobody was listening to. Then Evelyn came out. And right off, he started hunting for the nearest fire exit. She had red hair about this side of 98 degrees. She wore a black evening gown that held up by one snap and a prayer. She was the kind of a girl who could wear a Mother Hubbard and make it look like a negligee. And when she sang, it came out low enough to strike oil. After she was through, I asked the bartender to give her a message. She walked over to me, and she wasn't happy one way or the other.
Are you the man who wanted me?
One of them. You're Evelyn, huh?
Yeah. What'll it lead to?
A crisis if you don't sit down.
All right. You've got me interested. Now, what's on your mind that we can talk about?
My name's Madero. Now, let's start with a friend named Pete Sutro.
Let's continue. What do you want to know about him?
Where is he?
Are you a cop, or will you pay for the right answer?
I need too many of them, baby. I'm way out ahead in a murder derby, and I'll pitch homicide anybody I can get.
What do you want Sutro for?
I think he shot Marty Kane.
Someone should have, but you're betting on the wrong horse.
You're prejudiced. Sutro was your boyfriend.
That's right. He was my boyfriend, but I haven't seen him lately.
All right, then. What was the last thing you did with him?
I'll read my diary to you someday.
Now, look, baby, you got a choice. I'm going to rough you up or let the pros do it.
Let go of my armadillo. Or I'll call a bouncer.
Call Sutro. Now start talking before I bruise you up good.
Slow down, Madero. You're out of my weight class.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what you want to know.
Should I take notes or is this going to be quick?
I don't know. Depends on how sentimental I get.
That's all right. I got a handkerchief.
Okay, I'll tell you. I used to be Pete Sutro's girl in Detroit. Then one day he skipped out and left me hanging on the vine.
Don't worry, baby. You haven't withered yet.
I started looking for him, and so did Kane.
Why Kane?
He and Pete had a deal together. Pete ran out with all the dough.
Your boy should have run for Congress. He's got a nice record. What kind of a deal did he have with Kane?
I don't remember.
All of a sudden, huh?
I'm shy when it comes to strangers. Let's just end it by saying Pete disappeared.
Let's say you're dummying up.
I love Pete, and I wouldn't want anything to happen to him.
Do you carry a picture with that torch, baby?
Sure. Want to see? Here's a snapshot of Pete in my locket. Do you know him?
Not this season, though.
No. I want him back. He was a good guy.
Yeah, your boy worked up a lot of people. He made number one nightmare for a guy named Nat Finley.
I heard. And I want to see Finley, too.
You saw me, miss. And I want to talk to Madero.
Hello, Finley.
I got to see you alone, Madero. And I got to see you now.
You lost your option. I'm freelancing again.
Well, you can't walk out on me.
This is going to hurt, fella. Your wife paid me to drop the job.
That's what I got to talk to you about, Madero. I think she wants to drop me, too.
Finley grabbed me by the arm, and you could tell he was scared. His jaw was shut tighter than a wall safe, and his Adam's apple rode up and down like a yo-yo. Evelyn wanted to compare notes with him on Sutro, but right now Finley was as friendly as a no-limit poker game. He hustled me out of the Jade and into a waiting cab. He wouldn't say anything because of the driver, so he sat in one corner, rubbing his hands and looking straight ahead. When we got to the office, Finley paid the bill, and we went up the ramp. Inside, he had a little trouble getting started, like a big family leaving on a picnic. And then he got his voice.
I'm in a bad spot, Madero. I need help.
Have you tried classified?
I'm trying you. I tell you, my wife's out to get me. She keeps telling me I'm crazy. She's trying to talk me into it.
A lot of wives feel that way, Finley. She'll get over it.
Yeah? Well, I'm Madero. She's trying to send me to an asylum. She and Sutro.
You got enough worries to start a peace conference. What brings Sutro back into the headlines?
I found a letter in Sheila's purse. Kane wanted $10,000 from Sheila to keep quiet about Sutro.
All right, quit crowding me with ghosts. So your wife had a past.
And she and Sutro have a future unless you help me. Help me, I tell you. I tell you, Sutro's behind the whole thing. He and my wife must know each other, and they're trying to get rid of me.
You're getting a complex, Finley. Slow down.
Well, you got to help me.
Well, who's going to help me? I got a murder rap to beat.
Oh, but I'll clear you, Madero. I'll clear you if you help me now.
You couldn't clear your own throat in an empty tunnel. What makes you 8 feet tall?
This gun in my hand.
Oh, stop pointing it, fella. You're too nervous to aim.
Well, you don't understand, Madero. I'm not pointing it at you. I'm giving it to you. This is the gun that killed Kane.
You were there when it happened?
No, but either my wife or Sutro was.
When did you dream that up?
An hour ago. I found it in my wife's closet. Two slugs are missing, and I got a feeling it killed Kane.
Send it to homicide. They'll let you know who did it by return mail.
I can't, Madero. I can't just yet. I don't know whether Sheila or Sutro did it. I got a feeling inside. You've got to find Sutro, or he'll end up killing me yet.
That's a prediction?
Wait a minute. Someone's coming down the hall. Hide the gun, Madero. They're after me now.
Yeah.
They got the light fuse.
Lay low. They're aiming for something bigger.
What are you going to do, Madero?
Just waiting for something to happen.
Madero. Madero. I guess it happened.
Somebody turned a flashlight in my eyes and then hit a four-bagger. If they hung around, they could have seen me do a couple of quick quivers a chorus girl would have been proud of. I laid there in the dark for a while. If you're going to look messy, a blackout isn't a bad place to do it. After a while, I tried to get up, but my stomach felt as empty as a horse laugh at a funeral. I sprawled out again, and I tried to figure how a name like Pete Sutro could start so much pain. Then the lights went on. They should have stayed off, because Warcheck was breathing over me like a steam engine with a broken heart.
Hello, Madero. Does the light bother your eyes?
Yeah, Warcheck. Get out of it.
Get used to it. It's a lot stronger down at headquarters. Tell me about the gun on the floor.
I heard you were coming. I wanted to commit suicide.
You didn't try hard enough. Just got a phone tip that said you had the gun that killed Marty Kane. Hand it to me.
All right, copper. I'll make it easy for you. Finley left the gun here before somebody sapped me.
Mm-hmm. Who's somebody? Don't any of your friends have names?
Sure. Check with Finley. He was here when it happened.
It was dark, Madero. How did he see? With an electric eye?
I don't know. Maybe he smelled his wife's perfume. Look her up, too.
She's that interesting, huh?
Kane used to think so.
What do you mean?
He was blackmailing her.
Look, Madero, a grocery list is blackmail to you. I'll put you on the inside.
Finley found a letter in her purse. Kane wanted $10,000 to keep quiet about Sutro.
Finley told you all about it, huh?
He can't keep a family secret.
And the wife tumbled Kane to keep him quiet. Is that the idea?
Well, this is your good day, Warcheck. Find Sutro now, and you've licked the whole thing.
No, you find him, Madero, and we'll give you a reward.
You're too generous. What's the pitch?
Sutro's wanted for a payroll robbery in Detroit. He's been out of sight for a year now.
He hasn't been out of mind, though. Finley thinks his wife is carrying on a sideline with him.
Look, Madero, I talked to your boy, Finley. He's got enough dreams to start a mattress factory. I don't believe him. I don't believe you.
You don't believe the world is round. Take stock, Warchick, and start learning.
Yeah, I will. I will. Let's see how much the fingerprints on this gun teach me. If you've got a story, I'll stay after school.
You'll still wear the dunce cap.
That's all right, Madero. There'll be a badge on it.
Warchick wrapped the gun up in a handkerchief, and if it killed Marty Kane, I might as well start writing letters to the governor. The gun was a plant, but I had about as much chance of selling that to Warchick as a pair of short pants to a reform school. Warchick stood there and smiled, and then he walked out. Oh, there were a lot of questions again, like who sapped me, and did Finley really have a story? The more I thought about it, the more snarled it got, and then the phone rang. Yeah.
Hello, Johnny. This is Father Leahy. Are you still free?
Yeah, but I'm breathing hard. How'd you make out?
Fine, Johnny. I sold 10 raffle tickets.
What'd you find out?
Warchick just got a teletype. Sutro pulled a payroll robbery in Detroit. They think Marty Kane helped him.
Well, that figures. What else?
Sutro and the Doe are supposed to be somewhere in town.
Yeah, even the bloodhounds are worried. How does Sheila figure?
She and a girl named Evelyn were both in love with Sutro. But rumor has it that Sutro's favorite was Evelyn.
What about Finley?
Sheila must have got tired of sharecropping, so she settled for Finley. Both came in from Detroit about a year ago.
But, Father, it's still fuzzy. Marty Kane was blackmailing Sheila because of Sutro. There must be a tie.
Evelyn's asking the same question, and she thinks Sheila knows the answers. She's on her way to the Finley place for a showdown.
Thanks, Father. I'll tag along and grab a seat on the sidelines.
It'll be a free-for-all if those two girls tangle.
Don't worry, Father. They won't get in my hair.
Don't be too sure. Samson had trouble with one girl.
Father Leahy hung up, all the pieces began to fall into place. All but one. Where was Sutro? He was around somewhere, but it was like throwing a headlock on a shadow. I grabbed a cab out to the Stafford Arms, and when I got there, the doorman looked at me as if I'd just blown up an orphanage. I took the elevator and got off on the sixth floor. Then I leaned on the doorbell, and Sheila answered. She was wearing a pair of rose-colored lounging pajamas, and I've seen baked potatoes with looser jackets. She must have been surprised, but she didn't blink an eyelash.
Are you pausing or opposing, Mr. Madero?
I'm looking for trap doors.
Oh, well, you're going to look that way. Come inside.
Yeah.
Now bring that gleam in your eye over to the fireplace. We'll warm it up a little.
It won't look good in company.
Why? Who's company?
Evelyn's a little late. She got tied up sharpening her claws.
Evelyn who?
Hold out, baby. She's got a better question than that.
Like what?
Like, where's Pete Sutro? The key sounds like a friend.
That's too early. That's probably my husband, Matt.
Oh, hello, Madero. I'm glad you're here. Somebody's been following me.
Oh, you're dreaming again, darling.
You see? What did I tell you? It wasn't a dream. That must be her.
Hello, Sheila. Remember me?
You must have the wrong place, lady.
That's the right idea. I want Pete Sutro back.
You want too much.
I'll grab anyway. I've come for Pete, Sheila.
You came too late. He's dead. Pete Sutro died 2 years ago in Detroit. Do you hear me? He's dead.
Not dead enough. You're lying, Sheila. Pete Sutro is standing right behind you.
What do you mean? That's my husband. That's Nat.
So you gave him another name and another face. But you can't give him another voice. That's Pete Sutro.
What are you talking about? What are you saying? I'm not Pete Sutro.
Don't you remember me, Pete? I'm Evelyn. Oh, what did they do to your face, darling?
My face? I was in an accident. It's hard to remember things.
Remember the payroll robbery, Pete? You were supposed to come back to me.
Payroll robbery? Yeah, it was an accident. I was hurt. I can't remember anything else. It's so hard to think. Well, you were there, Sheila. What happened?
Go ahead, Sheila. Tell him what happened. Tell him that he's Pete Sutro. Tell him that you stole him from me. Tell him that you killed Marty Kane.
All right, Evelyn. I'll tell it to you first. It was a good campaign, but I'm voting you dumb.
Put away
now.
The gun. Pete won't stand for
it. He's henpecked now.
What are you doing, Sheila? You'll hurt him.
I'll try.
You shot her. You shot... Evelyn.
Pete, you remember me. She broke us up for good. But you remembered me.
Yeah. Yeah. I remembered. Evelyn. I'm beginning to remember a lot of things now.
Then forget them, Ned. Just you and me now. We're married.
You are. You married a guy named Nat Finley.
Stay away from me, Nat. Nat.
Try Pete. See how it sounds.
Nick.
Give me the gun, baby.
Let go.
You killed Evelyn.
Let go. You didn't need her.
Not anymore. I got the gun now.
No, please, Nat. Please.
Tell me it's a dream, baby. Tell me I'm crazy.
You are, Nat. You are. Get out of my way. I'm getting out of here.
You're not quick enough.
The gun's empty now.
Yeah. So's everything. I'm tired, Nadeo. Tired.
Hold out. It's going to be a long trip.
Yeah. I told you, Nadeo. Pete Sutro was going to kill me in the end.
Yeah. You talked yourself into it. Warchak got the whole story the next morning. Seems that Sutro and Keene were in a big robbery in Detroit. The plan was for Sutro to carry all the dough and meet Keene and Evelyn at their hideout. But Sutro got smashed up in an auto accident and never made it. Sutro's face had to be remodeled, and when he lost his memory, Sheila made her pitch. She promoted a wedding and cut herself in on half the stolen cash. Changed his name to Nat Finley and brought him out to San Francisco. Keene and Evelyn got wind that Sutro had taken off for the coast, so they followed. They couldn't find him, and for a year, Sheila and Sutro got along without a hitch. Then Sutro began hearing his real name in his own mind, and before Sheila could do anything, I'd already shown her husband's check to Keene. He recognized Sutro's handwriting right away, and so he started to blackmail Sheila. He didn't make any yardage because Sheila stopped him with a .38. And then she tried to convince her husband that he was crazy. Evelyn won in the last round when she recognized Sutro's voice at the jade. It turned out that Sutro had been chasing himself until he caught himself. Well, Warchak asked only one question. How can a guy forget his own name? I don't know. A lot of hotels would like to know that, too.
We heard Johnny Madero, Pier 23... The Man Who Chased Himself, with an original air date of the 23rd of June, 1947. I believe that also starred William Conrad as Warchak. He was of Gunsmoke fame on radio. Again, Richard Breen and Jack Webb. This was their second radio series together, the first being Pat Novak for Hire in San Francisco, and then they moved to Los Angeles and started Johnny Madero. Jack Webb would have a third radio program, not paired with Richard Breen, before he would start Dragnet. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks for listening.
If I could save time in a bottle, the first thing that I'd like to do is to save every day till eternity passes away, just to spend them with you. If I could make days last forever, if words could make wishes come true, I'd save every day like a treasure, and then again I would spend them with you. But there never seems to be enough time to do the things you want to do once you find them. I've looked around enough to know that you're the one I want to go through time with.